We are about to begin the second Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Thank you. The words of Shimon HaTzadik.
Yes.
Shimon HaTzadik, who was the end, he lived at the end, he was the remainder, he was the last of the men of the great assembly. And as the Talmud tells us in Yuma, Shimon was called Shimon HaTzadik for future generations. Very few people have the name attached to them, the description attached to them of Tzadik. But Shimon was such a saintly man, he was such a great man, that he became known for eternity, for posterity, as Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Righteous One. And as the Talmud tells us, he served as the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, for 40 years, uninterrupted. And in those 40 years, seven special miracles occurred. One of them, as we know, the Talmud tells us, no rainbow ever came in the sky during the years of Shimon HaTzadik. There are many beautiful things that the Talmud tells us of the greatness of Shimon the high priest, Shimon the Tzaddik. One of the most famous, everybody is familiar with, is that Alexander the Great came to conquer the land of Israel while he was the Kohen Gadol. This is recorded historically. And yes.
What should you do if you see a rainbow, seeing as it's not a good thing, right?
No, we make a special blessing to remind ourselves that there was a covenant that God promised you wouldn't destroy the world. And this reminds us that there is wrath extended towards the world, and Hashem is sort of inverting the bow back to the heavens, restraining himself from the world. And it's a moment of teshuva, but it's not something we'd need to be overly concerned about.
Where is this blessing? I don't know.
I'll find it for you in the Siddur afterwards. It's printed in the Siddur. It's not hard to find. But Shimon HaTzadik, as Alexander the Great was on his way to conquer the land of Israel, and the land of Israel was in great danger of being taken over by the great Alexander, Shimon HaTzadik went out to greet him. And as he came towards Alexander the Great, Alexander looked at him and jumped off his horse, and he paid obeisance to Shimon HaTzadik. And he said, I see your visage leading me into battle. And Alexander, in deference to, and Shimon HaTzadik, paying deference to Alexander the Great, and by the fact that Alexander didn't overrun the land of Israel, Shimon HaTzadik said, in your merit, all the children that are born this year will be called in your name, Alexander. Which is why Alexander became a Jewish name. Not a particularly Jewish name, but it became a Jewish name because of that particular story recorded in the Talmud in Yuma. Shimon HaTzadik obviously was a very saintly person. Now he, being that he was the last of the men of the Great Assembly, yes?
Alexander knew if he didn't attack Jerusalem, he'd have better chances of the rest of the world.
Yeah, what Alexander was saying, probably, but what Shimon HaTzadik was saying is you don't have to impose your Greek culture on the land of Israel. We will pay deference and we have honor to you and we pay homage to you by calling the names of all our children in your name. What can be better than that? But he didn't want the Greek influence, insidious, the Epicureanist influence to penetrate the land of Israel. Eventually it did. As we know from the story of the great Maccabees, the Hanukkah miracle was when the Hellenists had essentially taken over the land of Israel. But that is the period that Shimon HaTzadik lived in. A very difficult chapter, very difficult period, very turbulent period. He was the end of the men of the great assembly. And he said three things the world stands upon. A very famous saying of Shimon HaTzadik. Al shlosha dvarim, on three things, ha'olam omeid, the world stands. Are you familiar with the three legs of the table? The three things upon which the world stands.
Al HaTorah, Torah.
That's right.
Service to God.
Al HaTorah, that's the song. Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. Torah, the study of Torah. Avoda, the service of God. Sacrifices, today we have Tefillah, prayer, intimate divine relationship, a personal relationship, and gemilus chasadim, doing good deeds. So Shimon HaTzadik here was not giving us at least on our first reading, was not giving us personal direction in life. He wasn't telling us, like the earlier Mishnah was saying, be slow to judge, make a fence around the Torah, bring up many students, or as the next Mishnayos will tell us, serve Hashem, not for the sake of reward. Open up your doors to guests. Most of Pirkei Avos is personal advice, directly telling us how we can upgrade our spiritual life. Shimon HaTzadik doesn't seem to be telling us that. He seems to be giving us a philosophical statement as regards the underpinnings, the spiritual underpinnings of the world's stability. The world stands on three things: Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. Thank you so much. Now, how does that bear any significance on my personal life? Clearly, there's more here than meets the eye. And in fact, whenever the Mishnah tells us the words Hu Haya Oimer, he used to say, as it says over here, Shimon HaTzadik, he was from the men of the great, the last of the great assembly, he used to say Hu Haya Oimer. This was a constant refrain of his. So clearly, there was a message that he was imparting consistently to people all the time. The world stands on three things: Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. Clearly, he was giving some important message beneath the words that provides practical guidance in our day-to-day lives. What is that? Okay. The world stands on Torah. It's actually a verse where the Torah says, the prophet says, that were it not for my statutes of Torah, the world day and night would cease to be. The world stands on Torah. Okay. Avodah, service of God. The world stands on our personal relationship with God. We have to have a personal relationship with God. Okay. The world stands on kind deeds. And if we analyze it just a little bit deeper, we see, and we've discussed this in the past, that a healthy individual requires three dimensions of personality that are well developed. And if we haven't developed these three dimensions of our personality, inevitably we will not be wholesome. There are cracks and fissures in our emotional base. What are they? We need a good relationship with our self. That's number one. If we're in conflict with ourself, if we don't like ourselves, if we look in the mirror and we say, yuck, if we don't feel good about ourselves, that's no good. That's no good. We have to be able to look at ourselves and like ourselves. Not like ourselves because there's an artificial, overbloated sense of our ego which isn't real, which when it's pricked or when other people say something nasty to us, all of a sudden all the air goes out of our system and we become so deflated there's nothing left. No, it's not dependent on what other people think about us. We have a genuine, healthy appreciation of self. We embrace the gift of ourselves that God gave us, who we are. And we're at peace with ourselves. We're not looking at other people and saying, I wish I was this guy, and I wish I was that guy, and I wish I was the other guy. We're happy with who we are. That's the first thing. That is the base. The baseline of a healthy person, most important. We'll talk about these. The second really, really important characteristic that we need to have is we need to have a good, healthy relationship with our source. Who is our source? Where do we come from? The Talmud in Nida, in the Gemara, tells us that there are shlosha shufim ba'adam. There are three partners in every person. There's a father, there's a mother, and there's our Creator. We have to have a wholesome relationship with our parents, one way or another. If we are in conflict with our parents, there's an internal instability that needs to be addressed. the umbilical cord to a mother is never really severed. It's never cut. We need our parents' approval. And surprisingly, our parents need our approval. It's a relationship that we need to address. And when it's not intact, we need to work on it. We've got to have some way, somehow, if we can't have with both parents, at least with one parent, a wholesome, warm, loving, at peace relationship. And when we have it, we're anchored. We're supported. We're at peace to where we're coming from. Because if we cut the cord from where we are coming from, we're floating alone. We're not anchored. And the parents that give us our physical body are only one part of the equation. In the same vein, everything that we see in the material, physical world parallels in the spiritual world. I'll come to your question soon, Alex. We need to write it down. We need to have a wholesome relationship with our Creator. If we're in conflict with God, we're not genuinely happy, content, healthy people. And sometimes you look at these liberal, militant people that are out there championing human rights, individual rights, women's rights, and everything else, everyone's rights. But you don't see real joy, real internal happiness, because happiness is when I am content with my relationship with my Creator, when I'm at peace with my Creator. And until I have forged a close personal relationship with my Creator, I'm not totally whole. Just like I need a relationship with my source, my physical source, my bodily source, my parents, I need a wholesome relationship with my spiritual source. I've got to be at peace with God. That's when I gain internal equanimity. I'm comfortable with my source of my existence, with the one who created me. And while I'm in conflict with God and I'm angry, why does he make such an ugly world? And why does he create such disparity between rich and poor? It doesn't breed for a healthy, wholesome personality. So I first have to be at peace with myself. I then need to be at peace with my Creator. But all of that is not yet a total wholesome person. In the final analysis, I need to also have a wholesome, healthy relationship with my fellow man. Because if I am at peace with myself, I'm at peace with my Creator, but I'm in conflict with the neighbor next door. And I'm angry at this guy and that guy that have shortchanged me, and I feel that this guy is rotten and that guy's no good, they still ferment within me a lot of unhealthy energy. I'm not totally whole. I have to be at peace with my environment. And my fellow man, by extension, my environment, I have to be able to embrace it and feel comfortable with it. If I'm in conflict with my environment, if I'm in conflict even with the place that I'm in, if I don't feel comfortable in my immediate environment, then there simmers beneath the surface discontent. So the total wholesome person stands on three legs. Anything that is stable has to stand on three legs, otherwise it's going to topple. What are the three legs? Healthy embrace of self, which is reflected in the spiritual world in Torah. Torah gives us an understanding in ourself. God created us, and at Sinai he says, look, here's your purpose of existence, here's your mission, here's the life plan, here's the blueprint, this is what it's all about. When I engage Torah, I'm understanding my own inner workings. I understand why God gave me the tools that he gave me with. The lips that he gave me, the hands that he gave me, what mitzvahs I am supposed to perform with my body, and how I'm supposed to conduct myself. When I'm at peace with that, I'm at peace with myself. Torah gives us insight into our own inner workings. Avodah, the service of God, gives us insight into our relationship with our Creator. Because Avodah is our interpersonal relationship with our Creator. Avodah, service, prayer. Dialogue. if I can't yet pray openly with my Creator, if I'm angry or I don't feel comfortable speaking with Hashem in a personal way, then my relationship is not yet intact. So I need avoda. But all of that is fine, but not yet complete until I have a wholesome relationship with my fellow man. And that is expressed with gemilus chasadim, doing kind deeds. Being able to be benevolent, sensitive, empathetic, philanthropic to other people, caring for society at large. So all three, when they come together, Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim, you have a healthy, stable person. And each person, the sages tell us, is an Olam Katan, is a miniature world. Just like in the body, each drop of DNA is a microcosm of the whole person. So similarly, each person is a microcosm of the whole world. And we may not fully comprehend this, but the world at large, man is created B'Tselem Elokim, the world, the cosmo, is in a sense, in a broader sense, in a Kabbalistic sense, encapsulated within the human frame, the head, the soul, down to the hands, the trunk, down to the body, down to the feet, down to the akev, the heel, which is the most physical, the lowest extremity of the body. All of it reflects the whole world, a map, in a sense. It's like a map of the whole world. And just like in the world at large, our job is to connect heaven and earth, to bring God down to this world. So within our little world, our job is to put mind over body and connect heaven to earth. Control our impulses. Big job. That's what it's all about. So, Shimon HaTzadik is not just telling us something philosophical. Oh, you know, the world stands on three things. Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. Go figure. Brilliant. Wow. No, Shimon HaTzadik is giving us personal guidance. And he's telling us that we need to holistically combine a healthy relationship with ourselves. Number one, we've got to embrace ourselves and feel comfortable with ourselves. Torah gives us the ability to finally feel our own inner purpose of existence. Torah. Avoda helps us take that purpose of existence and create meaningful dialogue and relationship with our Creator. And Gemilas Chasadim brings it all home. Because we're engaged with one another. We're all interfaced and networked with one another. And only when we can have a healthy relationship with our fellow man have we realized our true mission in life. So they all come together. And in fact, on Rosh Hashanah, if you recall, there's a high-pitched moment in prayer when the Shliach Tzibur, the Baal Tefillah, the one who leads the prayers, comes to a particular point after Unasana Tokov where he says, and everyone says together, Uteshuva, Utfila, Utsudaka, Ma'avirines Roa Hagzera. You remember that? And Teshuva, repentance, Tefillah, prayer, Tzedaka, giving charity, removes the evil decree. Do you remember that? You'll be familiar with it when you see it this year. Everybody chimes it out together. We need all three. And the commentaries explain, Teshuvah is our internal perfection. We return to our real selves. We realign our mission in life. Tefillah is our relationship with God. Utzedakah is our relationship with our fellow man. And if you'll notice in the Siddur, on the words of Teshuvah, Utfilah, Utzedakah, here you have the words in the Uteshuva and repentance, Utefila and prayer, Utzedaka and charity. And on the top here, you'll have the little word there, Kol, Tzom, Mamon. Do you remember that? Right? You look in the Machta, you'll notice it. Teshuva. That's the voice that we call out. Tefillah, I'm sorry, tzom. Teshuva is tzom, is fasting. That's we fast. Tefillah is kol, is the voice. Or tzedakah is mammon, money. And if you'll notice, the numerical value of all these three words is the same. Do you look at tzom? How much does that add up to? 90, 40, and 6 is?
136.
How much does that add up to?
136.
136. 100, 30, and 6. Mammon, 40, 40, 50, and 6? 136.
Wow.
Each add up to the exact same. How much is 136, 136, and 136 altogether? Quick mathematics.
4, 2, 8.
That's right. Ish, we use the King David says in Tehillim, Ish ba'ar lo yeda, ukesil lo yavin es zois. The commentaries say, Ish ba'ar, a boar, a simple man, lo yeda, he cannot know. Uksil, and a fool, kesil, lo yavin es zois. He can't understand zois, can't understand this, says King David. How much does ba'ar add up to? How much does ksil add up to?
270.
30. 30. 30. 30. 30. 30. 30. 30. 30. 30.
120.
Ish ba'ar lo yeda. Uksil. Uksil. 160, 80, 120, 1 second, 40, 60 is 126, ukesil. I think it's ukesil is 126. We'll see soon, it's ukesil. I think there's an extra yud there. But ishbar, say the commentaries, ishbar, zois adds up to 408. Ishbar lo yeda, a man that only has 272, 136 and 136 adds up to 272. Ishbar, a man even if he has two of them, lo yeda, cannot connect to God. Uksil, and someone that only has one, a fool, lo yavin, cannot understand es zois. Zois is what we need. And so on Yom Kippur, the Torah tells us, "Bezos yavo Aharon el Hakodesh." With Zos, Aaron goes into the inner sanctum, in the inner sanctuary. We need all three. Zos is the numerical value of all three together. 136, 136, and 136. That's what the commentaries say, just as an aside, a little outside insight. But all three together are what is necessary in order to enter the inner sanctum. And that was the Avodah on Yom Kippur, when we were perfecting all three dimensions and bringing everything back home. So that's the simple message here of Shimon HaTzadik. But if you'll notice, Torah is a singular word. The world stands on Torah. Avodah is a singular word. Personal relationship with God. Gemilus Chesed is not what's written. It doesn't say it in the singular tense. It says it in the plural. Gemilus, doing candides, chasadim, many candides. And the commentaries say something very beautiful. They say, really, when we do candides, we think that we are acting benevolently to the person who we're giving to. We're giving the person. But in truth is, every time we give, we are really taking to ourselves. Really taking back. Yosa, the Gemara uses an expression, Yosa mimasha ha'oni, Osa im ha-balabayas, ha-balabayas, Osa im ha'oni. More than the poor man does with the household owner, the household owner, the one who is giving, is doing more than the household owner is doing with the poor man is doing with the household owner. Because when we give, we're really taking back. Which is why in the Torah you will see that there's always an expression when it says, you shall give, it always reflects there's a two-sided relationship. When it says, the Jewish people should give to the temple, it uses a cantillation note. V'nasenu, it's called Kazma V'azla. V'nasenu, it goes back. We think we're giving. When we're giving, we're really taking to ourselves. Because ultimately, we're investing in our real long-term Olam Haba portfolio. What we give is what we essentially have at the end of the road. That's the most important thing. So with Torah and with Avoda, we may not feel the effects, even though it's there, we may not feel the effects in the long term personally. But with Gmilas Chasadim, doing kind deeds, everything comes back. Shlach lachmocha al pnei hamoyim, King Solomon says, cast your bread upon the waters. Ki berov hayomim, because with the passing of time, yimsa'eka, you will find it back. Charity always comes back. Many, many stories to that effect. Being that we've concluded the Mishnah, allow me to share with you a little personal story just to this effect, how Gemilas Chasadim, really kind deeds, comes back. It may take time, but it all comes back. And it's a story that my father shared with me. May his memory be blessed. Passed away. My father passed away about 7 months ago. 8 months ago. And before he passed away, the year or two before he passed away, he shared with me many family stories and personal vignettes. Went to visit him many times. And at one time, he told me a fascinating story. It made a very strong impact on me. I may have shared it with you, but it's beautiful. It has a beautiful message to us. My father was born in 1920. And he was born in England, in Manchester, England. The truth is, his great-grandfather, his great-grandfather came to England. His great-grandfather came to England at the turn of the century. His name was Luzer Reich. And my father remembers him when he was a young boy. He passed away, my great-grandfather passed away in 1928. So my father was only 7 or 8 years old when his great-grandfather passed away. But he remembers him. He remembers sitting on his lap because he was his oldest great-grandchild and he was so proud of him. He used to sit on his lap and he would give him little candies or raisins or whatever it was in those days. My father remembered him. He was a very special person. My father, may his memory be blessed, grew up in England. Went for a year or two, beginning of the war actually, he was in Belgium in a yeshiva, came back to England, and during the war it was very difficult, but he had to start making a living. He got married in 1943, he was a young man, he was 23 years old, and he had to go out and make a living. And he tried his hand at different things, nothing really worked. He tried his hand first at a travel agency, but after the war nobody was traveling, everybody still had ration cards, it was a very difficult time. He started an insurance business. My father was young. He started an insurance business, and it was very difficult. It really wasn't going anywhere. He was struggling. He was young. He was married. He had already a child, and he was trying to pay his mortgage payments on his house. It wasn't going good. It was very difficult. He couldn't make a go of it. And in 1946 and 1947, he was almost contemplating giving up. It was so hard. But he persevered, he kept on going. And he tried always looking for leads in business. My grandfather, his father, had a textile business. And my grandfather's most important and valued customer was a Syrian fellow by the name of Mr. Lababidi. This fellow was my grandfather's very close friend. Very, very close friend. And this fellow used to buy on consignment, shipments of textiles, and he would send them all these British broadcloths and good stuff he would send out to the Middle East. And he used to make a very, very nice living on this. And my father asked my grandfather, he said, can you not go to Mr. Lababidi and ask him if I could insure some of these shiploads that are going out, if I can get the business, if I can get my hand on that business, I have it made. My grandfather asked this, Mr. Lababidi, will you help my son? So he said, oh, Heschel, that was my grandfather's name, I would love to help your son. that business goes to the bank manager. The bank manager always extends credit to me. That's where he makes his fat. You know, he doesn't get paid much from the bank, but you know, he's an elderly, he's a very important person in the bank. He has the insurance business, so you know, he's made, he always treats me, rolls out the red carpet. If I take it away from him, I'm in trouble. My father pressed, my grandfather, please ask him again. So Mr. Labbabidi finally went to the bank manager and he asked him. My father went to the bank manager and the bank manager, he asked him, can you give me some of the business from Mr. Labbabidi? This bank manager was an elderly English stiff gentleman, and he looked at my father, young man, and he said, leave me alone, get out of here. I'm not giving you any of the business, this is mine. He pointed to the door in a very stern way. My father was very down. My father left his business card on the desk there by the teller. He was feeling very despondent. And my father said he remembers as he was walking out of the door, and he was just about to leave the door, the bank manager, he looked back and he saw the bank manager looking at the card. Father didn't make much of it, and as he's stepping out of the big doors, the bank manager told the teller, told the clerk, go after that man, bring him here. So the clerk comes running, he comes back and he's looking at the card and he says, is your name Rice? So he said, yes. So this is an old man, he looked at my father and he says, are you related to Loser Rice? So my father's a little startled. He said, yeah, that was my great-grandfather, but he's not been knocking around for over 20 years. It's 1949. The bank manager looked at him. He said, you know, you look a little like him. Come with me. Brought him in the back room. And he said to him, you know, if you're the great-grandchild of Loser Reich, I'm going to give you some of the business. My father looks at him, he says, what's going on? So he said, you know, I was a teller in this bank when I started out. And when I started out and I was a teller, people treated me very shabbily. And I was very, very down every day I came into work. And towards the end of the day, your great-grandfather used to come in, this was in 1906, used to come in and he would help the immigrants for an hour every day that couldn't speak English. He used to speak English. They only spoke Yiddish. He would help them open an account. Anybody that needed help, he would volunteer, he would sit in the bank and he would help them. And he would come over to me, the teller, and I would be talking to him. And he was such a regal person. He was treated me with such respect. He made such an impression on me. If he's your great-grandfather, I'm giving you some of the business. For 5 years, my father had total parnasa, total business, just from this one account of Mr. Labbabidi. And after that, my father told me for 22 years, it set him up in business. He was able to establish a significant business from this one account that his great-grandfather was pulling the strings. His great-grandfather, when he was sitting with those immigrants, had no idea that he was doing something to help his great-grandchild get on his feet. But that's what was happening. So we don't realize when we're giving, we think we're giving. We're giving. We're the benefactors. And the person has his hand out, he's taking. We're never giving. We're always taking. Sometimes we see the dividends, sometimes we don't see the dividends. Sometimes our great-great-grandchildren see the dividends. Sometimes we may see the dividends in the world to come many years later. But it's always gimilos chasadim. It's never a gomel chesed. We're never giving singular in the singular because it always comes back. It's a boomerang effect. You guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Wishing you all the best of British luck and Jewish luck. And we will see you tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem.